For August the 23rd, 2019, we talk about No Man's Sky Beyond, the Apex Legends PR fiasco, and we ask you about your favorite post-launch game reinventions. Welcome to Level 297. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David. Welcome back, Dennis.
Yay.
Yeah, we rocked at Freestyle last week. David, what you up to?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Lots of martial artisting and, you know, lots of just kind of enjoying the city. So, yeah, not really anything too much to note. What about you guys?
Oh, I'd like to hear Dennis. Dennis, what's going on?
Yeah, I actually just got back from Wonderbus, which is a new music festival that was up in Columbus. Hence the bus in the name, I think. And the thing that made this noteworthy is this was Luke and Milo's first music festival.
Oh, how did they handle that?
Yeah, I mean, they can't handle their weight at all. So it was a disaster.
Contact high. They get all paranoid. They start asking people if they're cops.
No, it was wonderful. There was there were kids all over the place, and bands, you know, that we were excited to listen to. Mm-hmm. Plenty of room to like kick a ball around and run around and play. I mean, it was hot as balls out, so we tried to stay in the shade.
Right.
Apart from that, it was a blast. The surprise of the night was a band called Trombone Shorty that I'd never heard of before. Complete like jam band, which has as big of a brass section as the name Trombone Shorty would imply.
Okay.
The last band we saw before we left, and they were just a riot. Like, they were a ton of fun. Really, really good. Just the perfect note to end on.
Nice. Oh, Jenny Lewis was there.
Yeah, she was awesome.
Yeah. No, just a really big fan of Rilo Kelly. I'd be curious to hear her solo live. That's cool.
She was in this like bright turquoise sequins tracksuit. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
It was long sleeves and no legs. Hmm. Like, it was, you know, Daisy Dukes on the bottom, but definitely a jumpsuit. Bright pink glasses with sequins. It was very Elton John, actually. Hmm. But she was amazing.
Nice. Was there a specific act that you were there to see out of all of them, or were you just kind of there for the overall experience?
The one that got us to like sign up, I guess, was Mount Joy.
Okay.
And we've listened to them on Spotify and stuff before. I wouldn't say that we were like huge fans or anything, but we knew them well enough to be like, oh, we would like to see them live. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was enough of an excuse.
Yeah.
I want to point out that the website for Wonderbus, the timer has gone negative for when the event is going to occur.
That's really good. Well, hey, you know, it's just letting you know. It felt like it was just yesterday. It is. Yeah. Felt like it was just yesterday, but it was negative 3 hours, negative 21 minutes, negative 54 minutes, and negative 32 seconds ago. Oh no, people are going to be able to triangulate us now. They know exactly what time this we're recording. No. Yeah.
Abort.
Thankfully, we're in three different time zones, so true. It's harder to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I am in the time zone that this takes place in. Fuck. Yeah.
The other two of you, save yourself.
Yeah.
Wait, no, Ben, just save yourself.
Oh no.
To be fair, this episode we're not in three different time zones. Yeah.
This is correct. Jala would be in the set. She would be repping central time zone, unfortunately.
Yes.
Mountain time's really underrepresented.
Yeah.
Have we ever had a presentation?
Like, where is mountain time? Like,
Denver.
Yeah, it's like Colorado, Wyoming. I think New Mexico. Yeah, like that strip. I
do not understand the appeal of. I have a ton of coworkers that are all about like they want to move to Denver, and that just makes no sense to me.
Cheap flights.
If they like the outdoors, that could be a good reason.
See, yeah. I like the outdoors, which is why I wouldn't want to be in Denver. It's like the one place where, you know, for greater than half the year, I am not going outdoors.
True, true. It'd be cool.
That's a very specific type of outdoors that you like.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some people go skiing.
It'd be cool to live in Boulder. Boulder always seemed nice. I have family that lives there.
I like to think that mountain time is kind of like island time. It's just more of a state of mind.
You got to be on skis. No. I thought you were going a whole different direction with that, David. Like, oh, I don't understand, or I don't see the appeal of time zones. And I was going to go all in on a universal time. Just everybody switches to GMT. It doesn't matter. Like, is it really that important that work starts at 9 and ends at 5? Like, I honestly couldn't give a shit if work started at 3 a.m. for me. It's fine.
See, you would bankrupt country music, sir.
I suppose.
Yeah. So when are you going to give us the downsides?
Country music can be fine.
See, I feel like there's some sort of weird thing where country music is only good when it's not called country music.
What do you mean?
What?
Well, because, like, technically, blues is country music, correct?
It's its own thing.
You know, it's country music that's, you know, actually decent.
I think blues is distinct enough.
What's the definition of country music?
I don't know.
Music that David doesn't like, apparently.
I suppose. Coming out hard against Denver, against country music?
Huh. Shots fired!
Sorry, Middle America.
Yeah. How about you, Ben? What's up?
Not too much. I went and visited a friend who just got a house out in Duval, Washington, which is a very small town-ish. And it was interesting. It's the entire town, like everything, all the stores, all the shops are called Duval, whatever the thing is. So like Duval Hardware, Duval Groceries, Duval Thai for the one Thai restaurant in the town. I don't know.
Forgive me for having lowered expectations. I wouldn't expect a town that size to have a Thai restaurant.
I know. Yeah. It's a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. There's pluses. It's not completely, I don't know, cultureless, I guess. But and the nice part is, like, if you stop talking, there's silence. It's complete silence. There's not like planes or cars or people yelling outside. So that part's really nice.
That always bothered me. I know.
No, I love
silence.
It.
Silence. You moved to the right city, David.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I think. See, it's honestly it's the in between places that really bother me. Like, I think what it is, you know, New York, big enough that, you know, you can't really have a weapon, but it's also big enough that you don't have to worry about, you know, getting drug off to, by like crazy serial murderers. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's those cities that are in between that worry me, you know, small enough that you could disappear, but, you know, big enough that you still can't, defend yourself.
Hmm.
When you're quiet, all you hear is crickets, but the crickets are like, hey, I'm walking here.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
The crickets are riding the rats around. That's their subway.
Yeah. I still maintain the rats are adorable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as they're on the other platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as the third rail is separating you and that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, I looked at Duval, and on Google Maps, the image that they have, some people intertubing in a river, and that looks delightful.
Yeah,
to me,
that's
actually
something I can get behind.
Oh yeah,
I didn't even know they had a river there.
Yeah,
that is the type of outdoors I can advocate.
I think we just found the most pro intertubing podcast on the internet here.
Oh, intertubing is great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, whether you're
let's talk about inner tubing.
Yeah, no, I mean, so there are two different kinds, right? There's riding down the river on the tube. The kind that I'm partial to, actually, was some of my best days as a kid were with my dad and his boat, his little speedboat, and tubing behind that out at Pleasant Hill over in Lucas by Malabar Farm. It would drag the tube behind the boat like water skiing, except it was easier. You just held on, and then they just take you around and do crazy stuff and, you know, throw you off the wake and then
try to shake you.
Try and wipe you out. Yeah. You end the day, but your arms feel like rubber. Some of the best summer days were spent doing that.
I feel like that is something that really needs to be X gamed. Like, it's completely nonsense, but I would love to see, like, someone, you know, become like the Tony Hawk of high speed inner tubing.
it's a little bit like it's like riding a bowl almost, except on the water, and the bowl is round and has a hole in the middle of it.
Well, that's another thing that I was thinking the other day, like, you know, there's all this stuff about like, you know, robotics and stuff like that making the world a horrible place. But I think the rodeo is some place where robotics could make the world much more badass.
I mean, more humane. Like, I'd rather people ride mechanical bulls out there than, you know, torture real ones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But mechanical bulls with like effing jump jets.
Yes. Yeah. It would be a nightmare, but, you know, we would adapt.
I like the idea of making the color that they're incensed by be random so that the matador has to figure it out.
Yes. What is that sound in the background?
That's a giant ambulance or fire truck going by.
Okay.
Or Godzilla.
Yeah, we're leaving it in. It's good.
I tried to quick mute.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. It entertained me. Who else has tubing memories?
I do. I'll... have both kinds.
Yeah.
You go.
Oh, I was just gonna say, as recently as the last vacation, we did some inner tubing. I've always known behind a boat was tubing, and then down the river was inner tubing, for no good reason. Just what's in my head, but yeah, it was fantastic. Sunburnt the shit out of my shins.
Otherwise,
a great time.
Yeah.
My most fond memory of inner tubing is doing it with a 6-pack of can of beer, following behind your tube, and having like cold enough water to naturally keep it cool. It's like a nice, like, active way, but you can also go drinking and like hang out with friends. I also got sunburned to shit on that as well. So.
Gotta watch it.
That's what needs to be fixed. Yeah.
And Dennis has shared videos of extreme pro tubing tricks, so that'll be
the second David said it. I'm like, this exists.
I want to see the hang time, man. Yeah, no, I also when I worked at the Center for the Blind, I think twice we got to go out. They held a rafting event. So people who worked, people and volunteers and some of the clients would go on a rafting trip over in Indiana on the Whitewater River. So named because of all the limestone around it that you look in and the water looks white. Not that it's actually like really, rapid or anything, but we drive over to Brookville. Yeah. And you know, just we would split, sighted people and, visually impaired. Hanging out on a raft and, you know, just kind of be out on the river for a couple of hours. You know, you drive up to the top of to the top of the river in a bus, take your tubes down, and then they pick you up at the bottom and then take you back. That was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, outdoors is good.
Yeah, I'm a little mixed on the rafting. I love canoeing though. Canoeing is definitely my jam.
I like rafting because you can fit more people on. That's a little bit more of a...
That's true. That's true. The thing I thought, like, I would never do it, but I think would be a lot of fun is they had in San Francisco, they called them like dragon boats, where basically like super long canoes that people would like paddle.
Yeah, it's like a Viking kind of thing.
Yeah, and that just seems like it'd be a lot of fun. Like,
yeah, cool. And for me, there's not a whole lot going on here. I've been upgrading the size of the SD card of my Switch. But that's about it. Want to take a moment and send good thoughts and vibes to Jala. She is having a really rough time right now because Rami, her pet cockatiel, has escaped and gotten away. We've been putting it on social media, but if you're in the Houston area and you can contribute to the search, you know how to find Jala. She's Jala Chan in places, but, we're thinking about her, wish her the best. Yeah. So, how do you guys feel about getting on with the show, doing a regular one?
Let's do it.
Okay. We've got the usual kind of show for you, the grind, the multiplayer, and then the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, when you have not been watching live music acts and dealing with your extremely high children, what you've been playing?
Yeah, I have been diving headfirst into the No Man's Sky Beyond update.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yes, and this was a no small part inspiration for the multiplayer later in this episode. But man, guys, they have taken, everyone knows the twist and turn story of their launch, mm-hmm. but they have taken No Man's Sky and made it something just incredibly special. Just unbelievably cool. I've also been playing in VR because that was the other most notable addition. So, they did a bunch of content adds and quality of life adds to the game. But the big thing was this is the update that made the entire game playable in VR. So I've been doing that on the PSVR, and my word, it's just the sense of scale, which for the game was already huge, is mm-hmm. now on a whole nother level. The way that they've kind of ramped up the controls, and I chose to start from the beginning just so I could get all the tutorials on how to do what, but very intuitive, very creative, and just feels great in VR. So I've absolutely lost myself probably, 4 or so hours in. I've jumped between systems once or twice, but I haven't made a ton of story progress yet.
How's
this thing is awesome.
How's the ship fighting and stuff like that in VR?
Yeah, so I haven't gotten into any dog fights yet. However, the joystick controls for flying your ship are probably one of the less polished elements that they added. Half the time it works just fine, and it just feels like you're holding a flight stick and controlling your thing. And then half the time it decides, nope, the direction you're pointing is now the opposite of what you wanted.
So you're using the PS4 magic wand as a stand-in joystick?
Correct, yes.
That sounds bad.
That doesn't sound like that would work, like, at all.
It has its share of frustration. But like I said, sometimes it's fine. And then sometimes you're wobbling around like you're drunk.
Yeah.
Like, I just not, so it is, it's odd. But overall, like, the flying feels great. And certainly once you get out into space, it's not nearly as much as a problem. But if you're trying to make a quick turn to, like, get in position to land somewhere very specific, it's easy to get yourself a little bit wonky. I think the major problem, and this is endemic to the flight controls of No Man's Sky in general, it's not a VR only thing, mm-hmm. is that by default it is yaw on the left and right instead of roll, if that makes sense.
Ugh.
So when you go to turn, you don't roll and pull up, you kind of just push it to the left and it'll yaw over that way for you.
And there's no way to change that?
There's not that I've been able to find. And I think there is in the base game, so I'd be surprised if it's not in there. Honestly, it hasn't been enough of a problem for me to, like, go look through the menu extensively for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is like one of the low points is just flying the damn thing. when you're trying to get in a very specific position.
I didn't mean to zero in on like the one thing that was met while you were like gushing about this game.
Oh no, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, that's usually my MO. So,
well, there will be plenty of gushing to come.
Yeah.
So get the bad out of the way first, and then we can have some fun with the good.
Yeah. So what are the significant additions that they have made in the Beyond expansion? I'm just curious because I know they've added so much over the years. Like what makes this such a big step up?
Yeah. So other than the VR update, there is the idea of base power. And so now there's systems for actually powering up the items in your base versus just having everything work by default. It's fairly, simple to set up like solar panels and batteries so that it's a non-factor. Mm-hmm. But what that also allows you to do is have things like switches and kind of some of the guts, that Minecraft have that people have gotten really incredibly creative with.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the community has had enough time to like fully explore that, but expect to start seeing ever more interesting things coming out of base building.
I've seen like a cyberpunk city that somebody built.
Yeah. So the other thing I was going to say that they've done is add 16 player multiplayer. So I think the limit when you're on a normal planet has gone from 4 to 8, and then they have hubs that house 16.
So but what you're saying is the game is finally coming out of early access.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. Hence the question this week. But that's allowed you to have kind of these, you know, that combined with the base building has allowed you to have these destinations. And there were already like kind of community built cities in the game. But now they can actually start feeling a little bit more like populated places.
Yeah.
Where you can have up to 8 people, you know, in them at once. And you have a lot more control and intrigue around base building. And, oh, by the way, VR works with all of it. And it makes me that much more angry at Ace Combat, which has an amazing VR experience that is, for some reason, shunted into only 3 missions. Yeah. So, yeah, but those are off the top of my head. Those are the major things: VR, multiplayer, and more complicated base building.
Mm-hmm.
This is also the first time I've ducked into the game since they did. I believe it was the next. No, it's I ducked in after the next update, but before their big underwater expansion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Slightly after the Notice Me Senpai edition.
And I've made it a point as I've gone to planets to like park near water so I can just dip in and see what's down there. And it is really, really cool. Like, previously underwater environments had felt, kind of separated from the rest of the planet in that it was lower fidelity, not visually, but just like there was less diversity. There was less interesting things going on. It just felt blah. But with the underwater update, which, you know, is older at this point, that's not the big new news, but it's just new to me. But it's increased the amount of diversity down there. There's more stuff that's like shimmering and glowing and doing cool things. And makes it a place that I actually feel rewarded for dipping into versus the place that I have to go if I'm trying to like, you know, find every animal on a planet or what have you.
So I feel like, you know, they've got the, where those like kind of folk statistics of like any forum discussion that goes on long enough eventually gets to Hitler and stuff like that.
Sure.
I think someone needs to do a study and establish, you know, any open world game that goes on long enough eventually gets an underwater expansion.
I think that's fair. That feels accurate. I can think of no versions to refute it. We'll say it that way.
I know. Did EverQuest ever get one?
Oh,
I have to imagine.
They eventually added more kind of underwater dungeons, similar to I don't know that it ever got to be a full expansion. You guys can I can take a look at the list while you talk more.
Oh yeah. By the way, I need to correct myself. It's gone up to 8 players on console, and up to 32 players on PC.
Yeah,
I
grabbed the game on PC because it went on sale like a really deep discount prior to this update on Humble. I think I got it for like $20, and so I'm curious to mess with that a little bit more.
I take it that means there's no crossplay.
Maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's crossplay. I don't think so.
Don't know.
But yeah, they've done a bunch of other small quality of life things, just like the ability to pin different formulas or objectives. And they'd already improved quest tracking by leaps and bounds. But now they've kind of applied that easy way to track to anything in the game that you want to start working towards. And I've certainly felt the benefit of that. You know, there's just constantly, if I look down and to the right, a little thing that says like what resource I'm missing for whatever I want to be doing next. So it's very easy to jump back in and remember exactly what you were trying to do and then go with it. Reminiscent almost of Horizon Zero Dawn in terms of quality of quest tracking and reminders of why you're doing what you're doing, etc.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Then, you know, from there, all I have to talk about is just the VR experience, like the ability to walk around in this world that I've inhabited before. I've kind of started this game three times now, mm-hmm. once with the original game, once after Next, and then now. And it's always felt big, but I've never just kind of looked at the world the way I have in VR. You know, I'll follow an animal around like a freaking creeper, just like just looking at it, looking to get some different camera angles, you know.
You walk up really close behind it, then explode.
Yeah. Pretty much. Funny you say that, because the next biggest thing for me had to do with cave diving. Just because of the way the grass is in the game and the way the geography is, there are frequently, you know, cave entrances or holes in the ground that are pretty easy to stumble into.
Mm.
Like you don't really see them until you're right on top of them. And, you know, previously it's just always been like, oh, there's a hole there. Whereas the first time I did it in VR, I was like, oh my God, I've stumbled into the maw of Mother Earth herself.
Like, there's a sense of scale. Yeah.
there's a sense of scale there that you just you don't get until you have the freaking thing, you know, strapped to your face. So that's a ton of fun. The aiming and mining feels very intuitive, and I think has the fact that you're just pointing and clicking to mine stuff or shoot your mining laser removes one of the major pain points for me in the game, which was you would find these deposits in the ground and start to mine them. And as you get most of it, there's always little scraps and bits that are kind of, you know, around the edges that you've missed. And getting those required just pinpoint accuracy with your controller, just very slowly, you know, moving to exactly the right spot to get, you know, the full use of this resource that you found. And some of them are rare, so you don't want to leave stuff in the ground. But it was painful. It was painstaking. Whereas now it's just as simple as looking at it and pointing at it to clean up those last little bits. So that's probably removed a full 60 seconds at least from any mining that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. One of the very first animals that I stumbled across was T-Rex like and hostile.
Okay.
So that was fun. And at that point, I'd kind of forgotten, like, your mining laser does damage to normal creatures, but then, you know, eventually in the game you get like a bolt caster and actual weapons, and I didn't have any of those installed. And so I saw this thing coming for me. I'm like, oh shit, I was kind of far away from my ship. And so just started running and running, turn around. Nope, still chasing me. Run. And it took me a little bit of, like, you know, Benny Hilling around. Before I remembered, oh, wait, I could probably use my mining laser. So, you know, turned, stood my ground, shot this thing dead before it could reach me. But then this thing, you know, this gigantic T-Rex-like thing had crumpled to a heap right in front of me. And I spent probably, you know, a minute and a half just walking around and looking at it. I felt like it was that scene in Jurassic Park where he goes up to, like, the Triceratops that's dying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a beautiful thing, this creature that I have slain. So mm-hmm. just... A lot of fun.
Nice.
That was a deleted scene in Jurassic Park where Hammond destroys the Triceratops.
Yeah, just completely eviscerates him. Nothing left.
I haven't seen Jurassic World. I imagine that's what it is. Oh, finally, how could I have forgotten? The most important addition to the game is you can now tame and ride the animals.
Oh, Lord.
Like any of them?
Any that, well, I don't know, maybe even the small ones. Everything I have seen has been at least the size of a fat wombat, we'll say. but yeah, pretty much anything. I've seen people writing. Note,
what size do you think wombats are?
Like maybe groundhog sized, but okay. a little bigger, like 1.5 groundhogs.
I think they never stop getting bigger.
You know what? I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere. Yeah.
They follow the video game, rule of aging.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The longer you've been around, the bigger you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, there's so many other little things that have been added to the game, but I won't get into all of them. So I have something to talk about next week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this has been an absolute delight. I don't know how, the studio is making money off of this or what the hell they're doing with their lives, but we are all certainly benefiting from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. We've always been asking that about them just for different reasons.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know. I still kind of see this as like, oh, the game's almost what they promised like 3 or 4 years yep. ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just kind of disappointed that they've, you know, in so doing this, they've made it a better game, but they've, you know, just destroyed what was probably the world's greatest simulator of nihilism. I mean, they basically built what is it from Hitchhiker's Guide, like the infinite perspective machine or whatever?
Yeah.
That was basically No Man's Sky at launch.
I poked around. Man, there are so many EverQuest expansions. There are some that whose titles refer to water, like the Buried Sea, Rain of Fear, the Darkened Sea, things like that. But none of them seem to be specifically about underwater stuff. Kind of seem to be more about like chains of islands and things like that. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Cool. Well, is that all for you for now, Dennis?
That is all for me for the moment. I've continued to work on Deck of Wonders and even had one of the people who bought the game at Gen Con is doing some streaming, or they're starting up a stream about basically early stage games where they're having people on and kind of playing the prototype and discussing it with the person. So I did that. I'm waiting for the link to the YouTube version of that to share.
Yeah,
but that was a ton of fun, and I'm very pleased with the progress I'm making on it. So
that's wonderful.
That's Deck of Wonders.
Yeah,
sweet.
David, how about you?
Yeah, so I haven't been doing a whole heck of a lot. You know, I've been continuing to grind on Warframe. I unlocked Necros, which is the, I guess, the necromancy kind of themed frame. So, you know, his two biggest things he's known for are you basically has a raised dead ability that you can spec it out for like 5% damage reduction for every enemy he, you know, raises as a zombie, which dramatically increases his tankiness. But, you know, kind of his main thing is he has a ability called Desecration,
mm-hmm.
which you can basically use the bodies of your enemies and, like, kind of consume them in Eldritch Fire for a chance at a second chance at a loot drop.
Huh.
Yeah, and so, you know, that can be both, you know, very, very useful for, you know, actually, you know, farming, but it's also useful because that then means you can have another chance at, like, health restores dropping, things like that. So, I don't know, that's kind of fun. I don't know. I feel like there's a ton of things that are like super exciting to me. Like I got the primed versions, which are kind of the end game versions of the damage mod for melee and attack speed for melee, but like that's pretty much boring for everyone else. Like I now do much more killing. So probably the coolest thing I've seen is I've gone into, there's a series of missions where you basically can hire out to one of the enemy factions in their wars against the other enemy factions. And so it's interesting because one, there's, then two factions on the same map, which, generally speaking, there's only one, and also one of them's on your side, which is kind of cool. But what really makes it neat is, these are all of those maps are, I guess, custom maps, and a lot of them are really, really epic. So I just got done with a series that was basically, two, like, capital ships, and you basically, fight your way through the, your faction's capital ship, get into this pod that gets loaded into a giant cannon that basically gets shot into the other ship.
Nice.
At which point you, pop out and, kill your way to the reactor room and overload it and then, run away.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
That reminds me of like really fun missions in, Star Wars Battlegrounds. Two mm-hmm. specifically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So they definitely, get a lot of, mileage out of that, that sort of stuff. Trying to think if there's, anything else. I've, been experimenting a little bit, with, some of the, custom weapons. So they've added the ability to basically, build either guns or swords by putting together individual parts in order to, customize it to what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm probably going to leave that to next week to really go in depth on, just because, I'm still at very much the experimental phase on that.
Right.
Although it is a little exciting because there's a number of weapons, most notably machetes and rapiers, that there's normally very few weapons in there, in that weapon class, and in particular very few good weapons in those weapon classes. So I'm hoping it'll be an opportunity to try some of the different stances I've not experimented with some. So I think that's pretty much it. So a little bit light this week, but good times.
That's fine. It's summer. We're allowed to do other things.
Yeah, so you say.
Yeah.
Cool. You will get your punishment later.
No, it's fine. That's everybody's fine. Everybody stop trying to punish each other. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I've continued playing Resident Evil 2 with the Claire storyline. I'm about maybe halfway through the game. I am playing it on easy mode, which is much less stressful.
Yes.
But I guess to counteract that, you have to run away a lot more in Claire's storyline, it seems like, than in Leon's. So it's kind of balanced out a little bit.
That's more of a second run thing, because Mr. X, he gets onto the playing field a little bit earlier in second run.
Oh, interesting. So that's true whether it's Leon or Claire's story?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. That's actually interesting. So is the state of the police station then different based on first or second run as opposed to Claire or Leon?
Really marginally.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
specifically, it's around the helicopter crash.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
David, you were going to ask a question?
So this is maybe a little off topic, but a kind of a lore question. How big is Raccoon City supposed to be?
It's supposed to be pretty big. They put it like in the Midwest in some mountains or something. So I always like put it alongside like Pittsburgh or something like that.
Okay, because it always bothered me, like, how do they have their own paramilitary force?
it's not Raccoon City that has the paramilitary. It is. Oh no, you're talking about Stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stars's foundation was, it was part of Umbrella's plot. It was a way to have enforcers, and enforcers above ground because of their interest in the city.
Okay. That makes more sense. Yeah. Cause that always struck me as a little weird that,
sorry. No, I just say it's funny hearing somebody say anything in RE makes sense.
But yeah, but that's been an enjoyable experience so far. I'll probably try and see it through to the end. I don't know. It's weird. It's a different game when you play it on easy mode. It's more of like, okay, what items do I need? Because I have too many items now and not enough inventory space.
Yeah.
So you basically have to like set guns aside and be like, all right, I'm just going to pick these two guns and only these two ammo sets and go with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And then I've seen the like branching storyline, like what the different secondary character is, as opposed to like Leon's story, yeah. I guess.
Sherry as opposed to Ada.
Oh, well, yeah. And then the antagonist, I guess.
Yes.
So
I feel like that would be a fairly easy choice.
Which one?
Oh, Sherry versus Ada?
Yeah. One of the most likable characters in the series, or one of the least likable characters in the series?
If you're coming at it from RE6, yeah.
I don't think I've played enough. Is Sherry the likable and Ada the unlikable?
Yeah, I remember Ada being insufferable at least as far back as 4.
I never got that impression, yeah. I guess. I mean, she was like a weird character, but everything in the game's weird.
I think Ada's like cilantro. I think that different people have different tolerances. Yeah, yeah.
You know, okay, yeah.
But for some people, Ada tastes like soap.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I can agree with that.
Yeah. So I think it's the like Ada is to David as Dante is to Jala.
Maybe, but Ada is also to Jala as Dante is to Jala, I think. Jala really does. It's not like I don't understand the complaints about Ada. It's just I kind of always have been there for the campiness of her. Which is just different tolerances. It's fine.
I haven't played Resident Evil 6, so I think this might be the missing piece of why I don't hate her. So maybe I should play that game eventually.
She's a real wrench in the works in 6. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
And they add, the ability to hate her for, poor gameplay reasons and on top of all the others.
Yeah, in her little section. But are you liking it more on easy, Ben?
It's much less stressful. For me, it's like I just want to beat the game once on normal mode just to, play the game more or less as it's intended, I guess. But, I am perfectly happy toning down the difficulty though for the second run through.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this on the way home. At least with Resident Evil 4, there are kind of options around. There's ways that you can kind of conserve your ammo where it's like, okay, shoot him in the head and then kick him on the ground and then stab him a whole bunch. You know, like that's like a very ammo efficient way to kill someone. But in here, the ammo efficient way is just run around them. You know, and I guess they try and set it up design-wise where it's like every room kind of has two paths around it so you can kind of juke around somebody if you need to. But there's certain places where you can't really do that, right? There's certain like hallways where it's just a single corridor you have to go down.
Yeah.
And usually the thing that's frustrating is usually that's where like not zombies but like secondary bosses can spawn and so it's harder to deal with, you know. So that can be a little bit frustrating at times. So I think maybe there's something I'm missing as far as like a good way to kind of negotiate that situation. But no, I'm still liking the game though. I don't know. I think it's interesting playing both ones because they do try and unlock like different portions of the settings or you go through, even though it's like the same location, you're going through different, you're going through rooms in different orders than you are with the other storyline. So it's interesting to see them try and make these like two playable games in the same like location. And the game's just like, it's very polished. Like it's just a really pretty looking game. So that's part of why I like it. I'm still going to maintain that it should be a $40 game and is not like a full Resident Evil game by itself, I think. No. But I don't know. That's just me.
It's going on sale more frequently now, too.
Yeah.
Did the did the original game, or I guess is this game, when you're doing the two playthroughs, do they both, I guess, more or less canonically happen at the same time, or is it just here's what would have happened if one person was there versus the other?
So there's places where they try and make it seem like, oh, I'm seeing the aftermath of the first story, you know, like I came into this location like later. But then there's other locations where it's like, all right, this does not add up at all. Like, but mostly what it comes down to is they reuse like a lot of systems to be the same for both playthroughs. So, for example, there might be like a place that you have to get two or three items to unlock something, and then you get a specific item that's like critical to the story. Like some places, those will be the exact same for both playthroughs. So you're collecting these two or three things, even though if you're thinking of both storylines, Leon would have already collected these and like set this up, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like maybe if there's like a reset button on this like clock type mechanic or whatever,
yeah,
somebody came in and reset all the puzzles, then maybe it makes sense. But
so I like to, like, my pet headcanon on these things is I like to imagine that the dumb, like, basic science item puzzles are actually, like, the interview questions that Umbrella had that you just happened to stumble upon.
I mean, so the canonical reason is that the police chief, Brian Irons, at least in the station, had everything all convoluted because he was insane and paranoid. And that kind of extended down into the lab.
I keep telling people there's zombies. No one believes me.
Well, he's on the take.
I keep telling people this is an interview.
So like the canonical reason then is like Leon goes through and solves everything and then walks out. And then he's like, then the police chief comes out. And is like, ah, I got to reset this all and takes apart all the traps and stuff. Or
no. So, I mean, the zapping system, which is what is what that kind of both scenarios take place at the same time. Like, well, like, you know, what that system was called, that is not in play here. So even though, you know, it never lined up perfectly in the original version of the game, here there really is no effort made to make it seem like there's a back and forth going along. Like you run into the other character a couple of times, like, and on the second playthrough, you will find like they will have like left you an item, you know, some kind of supply along with, you know, some notes, things like that in particular places. But no effort is made to make the sequence of events make any kind of sense.
Coherent. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's it is best if you try not to reconcile them.
Yeah. I guess that's not even faint praise, right? It's just like, don't think about it. Just enjoy it. I mean,
kind of just, you know, think it's just a different, you know, it just plays out differently for the two of them.
It's like time travel in movies. Yeah. Kinda, just don't think about it and enjoy it.
Yes.
Yeah. Got that observer effect.
Yeah. But anyway, that's all I've been playing so far. I'll probably try and finish it out this next week though.
Cool. Shouldn't have too much more to go, especially if you've already been introduced to the villain or, you know, the temporary villain in Claire's scenario.
Yeah. Ooh, spoiler.
And the game's like 20 years old. People know what happens to Irons. Oh man. Cool. For me, I've got two, and they both might be pretty brief. The first one is I put more time into Dragon Quest Builders, but I don't know that I have an awful lot more to say about it. Like it follows the resource and upgrade loop of your regular kind of open world sandbox Minecraft style thing where you get to a new area, it unlocks a new place and you have new resources to harvest and use that to craft better equipment, to harvest better things. The emphasis on combat is actually really neat insofar as waves of enemies will appear outside the base and attack it. you know, during the nighttime and at a few points during the story. You will say, you know, somebody will say, hey, a bunch more enemies are on their way. Are you ready for this big battle? And how you have set up your town is really important, because if those enemies get up to one of your buildings, they'll start wrecking stuff up, and you have to, you know, when you're done with them, build things back up, you know, to repair the damage that they have done. So you want to make sure you have like walls and spike traps and things up to stop them from getting in. So I'm just about done with the first chapter. This is a long game, longer than I expected it to be. I don't know if that is because I am just kind of in the process of learning and it is really heavy on tutorialization so far. But I'm getting cool stuff. Like, I just got like TNT, which is how you kill golems. So you just kind of like lay down one of these TNT.
Yeah. Here, eat this.
It's like you lay down one of these TNT blocks. And then you know, while it's hissing, you run up to a golem, bait him, and then try and get him to run right by it when it explodes. Stuff like that,
as you do.
Yeah And to like, and to make those, you have to I forget the name of the creatures, but like these big rolling rock enemies that explode, you have to go up and, you know, when you attack them, they compress and they start flashing, and you have to do enough damage to them to kill them and crack them open before they explode and just take out everything around them, possibly fucking up your navigation as it goes. Yeah, it's super neat.
So, I'm sorry, I if you've covered this, I missed last week.
Mm-hmm.
I still think my favorite thing about this game is still just the basic premise of, like, everyone except you has forgotten how to build things.
Yeah, it's really funny how they play that. You know, you'll just kind of like come across somebody who's huddled up in this half destroyed shack and like lousy rain. It's like, hey, do you want to come to a town? I'm like, okay, yeah, a town. Wait a minute, Cantlin's back. All right, cool. You know, making some armor.
Sounds like a dystopian future.
I mean, it kind of is. Yeah.
This is like the Ricky Gervais movie where he's the only one who knows how to lie.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think I also love the fact that they set it in like the timeline of the alternate ending for the original game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really funny because you get like flashbacks or visions of the events of the first game, and it's from the perspective of the hero of the first game, the descendant of Erdrick or what have you, and it is usually at like the decision points, and he like is constantly just trying to say like no to stuff that the game wants him to say yes to. So like the sense is that just this version of the hero did the opposite of everything that would have led to a good ending, you know, if that was the way that game worked. But, you know, of course he would have said this and start, he would have led us down this timeline. Right.
Hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, it's neat. A really good fit for the Switch as well. Any questions about Dragon Quest Builders?
I think I'm gonna ask this last week, but where does it fall in the between Stardew Valley and then the dead themed Stardew Valley that you're playing?
the Graveyard Keeper. It's a little different than those, just because this is about, you know, there is a heavy like base building component, whereas Stardew Valley is more about whereas both of those games are a little bit more about input and output in terms of trying to make money and things like that. Mm-hmm. This doesn't really have a lot of that. This is about like getting enough, you know, going out into the world, adventuring and exploring in this kind of voxel landscape, and then coming back and using that to expand your base.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is kind of a similar idea, but a different thing.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing is a PC puzzle game called Automa Chef. It is a very awkward name for a video game. So like automaton, but chef at the end instead of aton or what have you. Automa Chef.
More like a portmanteau.
No, sorry, not gonna let that happen. No, so this is a puzzle game where you are trying to build a fully automated kitchen for like a diner kind of thing. It's really similar to certain games by early games by Zachtronix. I'm thinking of Space Chem or Infinifactory. Although this is like a top, you know, it is a top down, you're placing things on grids, you're setting up networks of conveyor belts and dispenser machines and processing machines, robotic arms, grills, assemblers, and things like that. You have a limited space. You have limitations on, your budget for setting this up. You have limitations on how much power you can use, both kind of like the maximum draw, but also like the just power over time. So you're trying to manage it, manage the efficiency of your machines as well, and do like kind of a minimal if this, then that programming for different orders that come in, so that, you know, like if a cheeseburger is ordered, you know, only one patty is you know, released, and instead of, you know, going into the machine that has the going into the machine that makes the cheese, you know, the regular burgers, it goes into the machine that makes the cheeseburgers, and the slice of cheese is, you know, dispensed and cut up and sent there as well. And then you're also, you know, just, you need to make sure that the orders get there in time. There's food spoilage, the customers leave, bunch of stuff like that. It's real neat. It's very cute, very attractive game. I am a little bit just over the general like story hook, which is you've got this computer that is talking to you, or like, is this robot, like, hello, fellow human, you know, processor of complex proteins, help me take over the world. I mean, take over the fast food market. Ha ha ha. Stuff like that. Like, nah, it's basic and lame. But that's not what I'm here for. I'm not here for the, like, the mission chatter and the robots taking over the world kind of thing. I'm here for the optimization puzzles, which are good and fun.
Can we call this Overcooked Overclocked, since it's like overcooked but automated?
That's actually good. I like that. That just gets you back to zero after the portmanteau debacle that you put all of us through, actually.
This is my penance.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're a huge fan of Space Chem and Infinifactory, I think that this might be a little bit too simple for you. However, just as something that I saw on a, you know, just on a lark, and jumped into because it released and looked like it was my jam, I am into it, and curious to figure out more. Any questions about Atama Chef?
Can you never say that name again?
I mean, if I'm going to talk about the game again, I'm going to have to describe it. People want to know. I wish I could get away with it, but no, I can't.
All right, we need help. There's got to be a better name for this game out there.
You think
Cafectorio?
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people? Dennis? Oh my god, what'd they do with Dennis?
That would be talking on mute.
Yeah.
Dennis did something.
Oh. I thought they got
what
you.
I was trying to say. Yeah. Whew. inspired by No Man's Sky Beyond. And as I mentioned earlier, I kind of wanted to know about kind of reworks of games, not reboots of games, but basically now that launch dates are meaningless and there's the whole early access thing, there are multiple times in most games' lives where it gets a significant overhaul while being under the same name. So what are the best or favorite reworks or relaunches of a game, and why?
Yeah. I will get us started here with Casey, who says, Minecraft. I bought it back in the early beta build days, thought it was cool and sort of boring, and then forgot about it for several years. Finally started it again in 2019, and it's so far beyond the original that it's like comparing a book to the movie version.
We all know that the book version is the better version, right? I just want to make that clear in this analogy.
Maybe. It depends. I think the Fight Club, the movie, is better than the book, but you take it case by case. Minecraft is weird that it's been under a decade of continuous development like that.
I still remember buying it for $5 off of a janky website.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Crazy.
back in the alpha, like that was when, like, we were all in college or we were just graduating or something like that.
It was at least the third year of college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. And it's weird how nobody actually made that game. It just fell from the sky. Yeah. let's see here, Ben, what does Alex say?
Alex says, Final Fantasy, Mother Humpin', 14. Just all of the quality of life changes were such a welcome addition, and they can't stop, won't stop years later. Big Wolfers, I love that game.
Alex, man, has style.
Yeah.
Big Wolfers.
A modern Shakespeare, to be sure.
Yeah. I mean, famously, like, that had a botched release to the point where the reason the base game is called A Realm Reborn is because they're like, oh, nope, sorry, guys, I didn't mean it. I'm trying to delete it. Like, they pulled the drill. Yeah. Oh, man, I want to play Final Fantasy 14. That seems nice. There's a lot of cool stuff about it, and people seem to really enjoy it. But, oh, well, such is life. Yeah. David, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, No Man's Sky is a great example. I've been with this game from day one. I love how it's changed over time. But these guys that make this game seem like they love it too and want it to work to the best of its abilities. The turnaround on an update for the patches in this game is really fast. The community also is very weird and very awesome.
Nice.
It is a very odd community.
So, what is the community? Is it? I mean, it's obviously people who are not, like, you know, it's not the general population, which is just salty about No Man's Sky. Like, what defines the community for No Man's Sky?
It's the type of people who could live through the shell shock of the saltiness of No Man's Sky's launch and still love and be dedicated to a game.
Gotcha.
to put it simply, like, there's definitely that element of almost chip on your shoulder, like, the game is great now, come on. As well as just the insane ability to love something for just what it is versus what it was promised to be.
Yeah.
But there's also just this element of coordination that's required to build the world, because, you know, initially there was no way to find each other in the game, and progressively there has been more and more. And the initial promise was, like, you're probably not going to run into another person in this universe. Mm-hmm. But now there's a whole community around, hey, I'm building this cool thing. I'm going to invite people in to build it with me. There's very easy portal ways to get to other people's planets. Mm-hmm. There are communities, like, literally settlements that are set up in systems and on planets, doing incredible, like, base building, and not just base building, but, like, city building, as you saw.
No.
It's just incredible.
It's like active worlds.
Mm-hmm.
That was an old, like, 3D navigation visualization chat room. Think like Second Life before Second Life, from like the late 90s. Huh.
And each city has an upper limit population of 16.
At a time.
Sorry, I can't go home. City's
and,
full.
And on, it is 32 on the computer, damn it.
So I don't have anything to add on top of this, but it kills me every time I say this game's name, because my instinct is to say No Mansky instead of No Man's Sky.
I mean that doesn't seem like a problem.
Dennis, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, Dark Souls 2, Scholar of the First Sin. I get that it's not perfect, but it added so much to correct the initial launch's problems. I played both versions recently, and Scholar is much better. How far after Dark Souls 2 did Scholar of the First Sin come out?
It was like a year. it was just enough that we like we finished. No, like Scholar of the First Sin came out the January of 2015. When the actual game came out in like 2014, it was just enough to where the season of Bonfireside Chat about Dark Souls 2, it was only up to date for like a month. And then they released a brand new game that replaced the original, and that whole season just is completely inaccurate. Not completely, but quite inaccurate. Oh man. So, Scholar of the First Sin does, smooth out a good number of the enemy and item placement problems. Gives things a little bit more sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need to play that again. It's been way too long since I played Dark Souls 2. I feel like I've touched all of them except for that one recently. Let's see here. Rookie says, Quest for Glory 1. So you want to be a hero. A rare example of a game being relaunched before the widespread adoption of the internet. Those chunky EGA squares were replaced with modern, svelte VGA pixels. The whole interface was reworked from typing to point and click, and the music went from beeps and boops to MIDI. All of this while still keeping the heart of the game intact, including the ability to import your character into Quest for Glory 2, which would sadly remain stuck in EGA limbo for another 25 years before getting a fantastic fan remake. I can't think of a single rework/relaunch that contains such drastic improvements on all fronts. It is the equivalent of a 2 to 3 console generation jump. It's a big difference. It absolutely is. We did, when we did Quest for Glory 2 last year, for WoF, I kind of did a comparison between the EGA and the VGA version, and it really is, just a gigantic, leap, even just in playability and workability.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. A very interesting example of like, this is before the things that I mentioned that make the reboot, rework, whatever kind mm-hmm. of more common.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a look at like videos of the play and you'll see what this means. Like even the animation, and movement is much smoother. And then Ben finally here, what does Greg say?
Greg says, Metroid Zero Mission is my all-time favorite remake. They took what worked on the original game and updated it for modern gamers and added new content as well.
Yeah. It's a good game. Zero Mission. Yeah. So let's say ours, although I don't necessarily know that I have one. I think that for me, the improvements to EverQuest as the expansions came out, especially in those first three or four. So like I hopped in around the time like that Velius was out there, but like even just like Shadows of Lucklin and then adding Planes of Power, you know, the first of those adding the moon and then the Nexus for a certain amount of fast travel and then Planes of Power, just like straight up adding, teleport stones and things like that, opening up the world and just making it easier for guilds to get together and stuff. Like that game rapidly reinvented itself over the first 5 years of its life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I don't know if you can count Knights of the Republic 2 a rework of Knights of the Republic 1, but maybe that would be my answer. I never saw Subnautica in its early stages, so I don't have any basis of comparison, but that might be another answer for me, but yeah.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So I think probably I have to say Warframe just as a game that, you know, kind of continuously reinvents itself in nonsensical but awesome ways.
Yeah.
Although for a one that's a little more maybe less well known, and maybe even a little more dramatic, is Hero Siege. Basically started as a incredibly brain dead horde shooter. and by this point is a fairly sophisticated roguelike with like something like 6 or 7 acts of content.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. If you ever need some just mindless killing some fools, and or a game where you can, the classes include both a pirate, a redneck, and a Devil May Cry knockoff, this is the game for you.
What was that called?
Hero Siege?
Hero Siege, okay. Yeah, I never heard of that before. Nice. And then Dennis, is your answer just No Man's Sky?
Yeah, it's Nomansky for sure.
Nomansky, gotcha. I didn't mean to scoop you. It seemed like you were leading in a direction.
Yeah, I kind of said up front. That's the game that inspired this, so for sure.
Yeah. So we only had a few responses that time. It was a relatively specialized question, but I enjoyed the answers. Clean up a little bit of the free play that we had last time here. So Greg asks, given a choice and all things being equal, emulation or playing on real hardware?
Man, I'm going to say emulation.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody got time for real hardware.
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
It depends. Like if it is older than the N64, and I'm even including like regular PlayStation in this, emulator is fine. Just because save states end up being incredibly useful, and those games suffer from, certain usability, quality of life kind of deficits. You know, my primary experience with a bunch of this is like, I technically could emulate games for Hexcrank, you know, playing it to stream, but you just have no idea if something from like the PS2 or Dreamcast era on is going to just have emulation problems. So like if the emulation is rock solid, then yeah, sign me up. But if it is sketchy at all, I don't want to get 25 hours into a long game and then have it be like, nope, you can't finish it. Bye.
25 hours and you're like, oh, there's Russians all over this computer now.
I mean, not even that. It's just so certain games, they do little tricks to make them work on older, on those older systems, and emulation doesn't necessarily catch up for all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I'm trying to weigh, like, can I store all these consoles in my apartment if I needed to? Because that's basically going to determine which way I answer the question. So yeah. For now, I have enough space. So, yeah, I'll say regular consoles.
Yeah. David?
Probably emulation just for, ease of, use for prosperity.
Yeah. Agreed. Archival is good. Let's see here.
Bill. Also posterity, prosperity or posterity.
I knew what you meant. I didn't want to correct you on that. If everybody understands what you mean, there's no point in me being a dick and telling you actually. Yeah.
Don't be a blorp about it.
What's a blorp?
Damn it.
No, sorry.
It's all understood what he meant.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Bill asks, this is a very specialized question. Who is your favorite improv character from Abject Suffering or Everything to Guppy? You guys don't have to answer this. Just the Seinfeld curse is absolutely my favorite one recently. Yeah.
I feel like this is where you're supposed to mention Zoodog, right?
Zoodog is not necessarily a character. I mean, he's a character, but he is not necessarily somebody that we play as. Alexander asks, you're being talked with awarding a, sorry, you're being tasked with awarding a Masterful Game Developer Award. Who do you honor with the bragging rights and why? Favorite individual game developer that you guys got?
John Blow.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Hey, just for consistency and quality, I have to say Naughty Dog.
Yeah. Gotcha. How about you, David? David? David!
Can you do the thinking really hard?
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I was doing a Dennis and talking muted. I think probably Alexis Kennedy.
Oh, I know that. Who is that?
Made Fall in London, Sunless right. Sea, and Gorgeous Simulator.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Also, apparently, Dragon Age, The Last Court.
Oh, the iOS game? Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And for me, let's say Chris Avalon. Yeah. Let's see here. Dan Sayer asks, favorite Paul Verhoeven film? P.S. If you don't like any, you're a cop. And if you're...
I mean,
yeah, there's a joke about RoboCop here. So the favorite Paul Verhoeven film for me, Total Recall and A Walk.
That's, I'd say Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers is incredibly good.
Yes, Starship Troopers. Although, have I had time to tell on the episode, my family's story about, RoboCop?
I know this story from knowing your family, but go ahead and share it.
So one of the funny stories is, you know, my parents, you know, decide to do a date night, and, you know, go out to see the movies. And I guess, you know, my family's, you know, really not that big into movies. Mm-hmm. So they hadn't seen a movie since like the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and decided to, you know, just based purely on like the name and, you know, the poster or whatever, decide to see RoboCop, which, you know, as you could imagine, the there's a little bit of shock of going straight from like circa 70s movies to like a movie that's still fairly transgressive today.
Yeah, I mean, the opening of RoboCop is still incredibly disturbing. Like, I don't know, like the closest thing I could think of in or like mainstream cinema, you know, before that, like that wasn't explicitly like a horror thing, would be like a Sam Peckinpah movie. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. just so incredibly gory. Huh. Yeah. I remember hearing that story and they were just, they it's obviously played for comedy, but you know, when they tell it, but, yeah, I cannot imagine being in there and in their shoes for that.
Like, man, movies have gotten really violent in the last 10 years.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
Showgirls, of course. No, probably Starship Troopers.
Gotcha. I'm outnumbered. Starship Troopers is a fantastic movie. I do not mean to be gross, but the Denise Richards topless scene. Yeah.
I just like the all the people that are maimed as like side characters who are like older than 20 years old.
It's just really funny that, like, you know, that like the actual book Starship Troopers, not satiric at all, satirical at all, Paul Verhoeven gets a hold of it and is like, fuck yeah, satire.
Yeah,
I like there that he made the movie like by himself, like nobody else knew that it was a satire besides him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen Starship Troopers. I need to fire that up again.
Yeah, he really, I guess I didn't realize, before this question that all these movies were made by the same guy. Like, he really has a type.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still making movies today too. Yep. Like I know he's working on a movie right now. I forget what it's about.
It's coming out in like 20.
Have his more recent ones been, you know, kind of a similar thing at all, or?
I don't think so.
No.
I think the movie he's working on now is about like Catholic lesbian affair or something like that. It's called, I could be misquoting
called,
that.
It's called Benedetta is what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh.
Also has a Denise Richards topless scene.
Weird enough. So
as opposed to, you know, Bayonetta, which could have more or less the same plot.
continuing the filmmaker stuff, Tarantino or Nolan?
Gotta go Nolan for me.
Fincher.
Wait, is this like Christopher Nolan or?
Yeah, so Quentin Tarantino or Christopher Nolan. That's a tough one, man. I don't know. Yeah, I would have to say Nolan.
Has anyone seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet?
Yeah, it's good.
No.
Okay.
It's hard to co-sign a lot of Tarantino's stuff. Knowing more about it. I am in a just in the tug of war between separating art from artist. He is exerting a little bit more pull for me nowadays. I think, you know, if you asked me at a different time, I would probably side with him just because of how, you know, I don't know, just Reservoir Dogs is pretty formative for me, etc. But yeah, I would say as far as like just overall like bar of quality for work, Nolan would be there.
Yeah, there's not many movies that can top Interstellar and Inception.
Yeah, the Prestige, you know.
Yeah.
So this may not be my favorite among those.
Really?
Yeah, Prestige tops me. Yeah.
This may or may not, make me a horrible person, but I think Kill Bill Volume 2 is the only Tarantino movie I've ever seen. Similarly, on Nolan, I think I've only seen the first two of the Dark Knight trilogy and Interstellar.
Yeah, so, that's fine.
At least you're seeing their best movies. So
I think from that, I'd probably go with Tarantino, although I feel like Kill Bill Volume 2 kind of had my number.
Yeah,
maybe not entirely fair.
Have you seen Pulp Fiction? I feel like you have to have seen Pulp Fiction.
I have not seen Pulp Fiction.
You should see Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it's like Pulp Fiction is going to open up a lot of pop culture for you, because like pretty much everything just makes reference to it, and it's, you know, a fine movie.
And that's a real you can't go back moment. You will never be able to watch Pulp Fiction without having all of the memes and references and all that, you know, kind of in your head.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I walked into Pulp Fiction. I'm like, oh, this is 22 short films about Springfield, like, which is just straight up a Pulp Fiction kind of pastiche for a good amount of it. Yeah, no, it got into the bloodstream a little bit. Yeah,
I think that's a movie that does not age well. Like the first time you see Pulp Fiction, it's like, this is amazing. And then you watch it like 10 or 15 years ago. It's like, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. This is pretty shallow, but it's doing some interesting stuff. And then you watch it again without the expectation. And like, yeah, that's fine. That's fun.
So I think that's the general thing with Tarantino too. It's like all of his movies are really good the first time you watch them. Like, so he's a really good suspense writer. Whereas Nolan, I think, is like more like an evergreen writer where it's like, The docking scene in Interstellar, I think, is one of the best action scenes ever committed to film. Mm-hmm. So
which scene is that?
It's when they dock in the spinning space station.
I do not even remember that being a thing.
It's an awesome scene.
Yeah,
it's good. The antagonist in the scene is gravity. Like, yeah. It's great.
Yeah. No, I'm a real lame-o when it comes to Tarantino. My favorite of his is Death Proof. Mm. Yeah,
the movie that he recently more or less denied ever having made.
What? That's dumb. Death Proof is good.
No, there was a interview recently where he repeatedly insisted that he has never made a horror movie.
Oh. That's dumb. Yeah. let's see here. Finally, Patrick asks, if you had to start playing one game as a service game, which one would you choose? Lots of us do, actually. I would say Final Fantasy 14.
It will be World of Warcraft Classic for me when that comes online.
Oh yeah. That's real soon.
I'm going in with no true reference to the original World of Warcraft.
Nice.
In any form.
You're gonna have a lot of people who know every single thing about it and will be frustrated with you for not knowing every single thing about it.
Well, yeah. And the group I'm playing with is my tabletop group. So hopefully that this will not destroy any relationships by me being a filthy, filthy noob or whatever they call people who don't know Warcraft really well.
Noob's fine. How about you, Ben?
Night Elves.
Just for clarification, what is games as a service?
Either like an MMO or a game that is like a shooter looter thing, like The Division or Fallout 76, things like that. Just any like primarily online, frequently updated, kind of game.
Okay. I don't know, man. None of them sound fun. So that's fine. I'll say whichever one you guys are playing. Yeah, so yeah. That I can play with you.
Hop on with FF14. It's fine.
Aw. Yeah. So I think this one would be a tough one, you know, if I feel like I'm going to have to interpret this as if I can only play one of the many games as a service games I play, it would probably have to be Warframe.
Yes. That makes sense. And yeah, that seems like a multiplayer for me. Thank you, everybody, for listening in and for responding. The listening in part comes later. If you would like to participate in these, go to the Facebook page on Monday afternoons. That Facebook page is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Dennis, since we've been on this No Man's Sky kick, what's going on with the community there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I mentioned earlier, like, oh, there are switches in the game now. People are going to build crazy stuff. Someone is already, just in the time since I said that to now, built a combination lock for getting into their base, which is brilliant. But the one above that I had posted.
Yeah, sorry, I was mistaken. Okay. Continue.
Totally fine. Is actually about The Cycle, another game that I talk about perennially on the show, which I'm excited that it is officially coming out of closed alpha and is now in early access, whatever you want to call it. So it is opened up to anyone. You don't need a key to play it, although I don't think they were being particularly stingy with the keys beforehand. But go check out The Cycle. It should be up and available for all now. It is a player versus environment battle royale quester. So that's a lot of buzzwords altogether. But since its inception, they have just progressively pushed it further and further towards the PvE aspects, which I really, really like. To the extent that in this most recent iteration that is open to everyone, there's a new mechanic where if you kill too many other players during the match, you will be marked as ruthless and you yourself will become a quest objective to kill. So there's like a crime and punishment to that.
I don't understand this. It's like, have you considered just going with the logical answer of taking out the PvP that virtually no one wants to do?
Well, I don't think it's that people don't want to do it. I think it's that they want to do it too much. And the team has just progressively made PvE more and more rewarding. And like, how far can we push this and have people still fight each other?
Yeah.
And there's just in any game, there's always going to be that person that drops in and just wants to kill other players. And so they're like, yeah, fine. All right. Do that enough. We'll just put like a number over your head and send everyone after you. Like, well, we'll reward victory points for killing you. So that's not to say that, you know, engaging in combat and everything is disincentivized, but there's just so many really cool systems in the game and ways to win that don't involve being the fastest head clicker out there. They like also added it. Oh, go ahead.
No, I like that. Head clicker is fun.
They've also added a new enemy type, so there are now droids in the game as PvE enemies, which should be interesting. And yeah, just really excited to see this game continue to grow.
Yeah. Neat. The Cycle. Speaking of non-standard multiplayer, I got one to talk about that came out of Gamescom. That is the biggest game, I believe it's the biggest gaming kind of trade show in the world, possibly. Happens over in Germany, going on right now. We'll have more announcements later. Like, we just got the first batch right before we started recording. One that I'm excited about is that Illphonic, the team that made the Friday the 13th game, which my understanding is that was much better than it had any right to be. They have announced and revealed a trailer for the next thing they're working on, which is a game called Predator Hunting Grounds. So,
yes.
So it is asymmetrical, just, you know, very, very similar to how Friday the 13th was, except instead of one person playing as Jason, you've got one person playing as the Predator while everybody else is a soldier, you know, running around in the theater of war in some Central American country that America shouldn't have been in, doing missions, and then the predator comes out and starts hunting them. So the humans have to kind of like choose possibly between succeeding their mission and getting away or taking down the predator. The trailer is very brief, but they show a good amount of gameplay, and it is very fun watching kind of like stereotypical squad shooter kind of stuff juxtaposed with the third person action of the predator, like the predator stalking from treetop to treetop and going through his vision modes and stuff like that. There has never been like an extremely good Predator movie. I think the closest they got was Predator 2.
As opposed to, you know, Predator, which was
Predator's
a great fine. Predator movie.
I am a Predator 2 partisan. But Predator stuff has kind of always come to life in video games, specifically like the Aliens versus Predator PC games. So if this gets a little bit of that heat, I will bite my tongue and ignore the absence of xenomorphs and just kind of be real excited about this. It looks real cool. Watch the trailer.
I think for me, this is entirely going to hinge on, is there a button for, you know, giving your teammates just the world's most epic handshake?
what I want to know is the predator, do you have the ability to record the other person's voice chat and then play back a little sample of it to them when you're stalking them? Yeah,
I just from watching the trailer, like the way the predator is jumping from tree to tree, that better have some real freaking strong snap to grid stuff going on. Otherwise, I will be the first to fall out of the tree and hit every limb on the way down.
It almost would have to. It almost would have to be like a Batman kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, real jazzed about that.
That does sound cool.
Yeah. Let's see.
The thing I'll be interested about the game is how quickly the Predator can kill people. Because, like, at least with the Friday the 13th, like, there's maybe you could make Jason chase you for, like, a minute or two. So there's kind of, like, anxiety. But, like, here it looks like he can just rain down fire on people and, like, immediately kill people.
Yeah.
Seems like that might not be fun for the person being killed, but.
Maybe. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe you can outnumber them. But then again, it's asymmetrical. I think the idea is that you have one person who just takes turns having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, you've got another Gamescom announcement. What's going on with Insomniac?
Yeah, it's been acquired by Sony. So it's the first studio that's been added to Sony in a few years. In fact, like apparently Sony, I think they only have like maybe six or so studios under their belt. But the upside of this is if it's anything like the movies, this means they're going to start cranking out Spider-Man games every other year. so that could be a good thing. Since the last Spider-Man game was really great. So in case you know, Insomniac Studios, they're the ones who made the latest Spider-Man game. They've also made other games like Ratchet and Clank and Spyro, I think. So yeah.
It's really funny because as far as I can tell, like they have been basically second party for Sony for a long time.
Yeah, the only exception is Sunset Overdrive was Microsoft exclusive originally, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So no, all their good games are on Sony.
I mean, the games that you know them for, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so specifically Spyro, Ratchet and Clank, like they were kind of, you know, one of the studios that was putting out you know, PlayStation system seller mascot platformers for a while.
Sunset Overdrive was good in its day. I just never really got a follow-up.
Yeah.
To be fair, I did not play it. I only heard like incredibly negative things about it.
It was like a differentiator in the early days of the Xbox One, around launch time. Like it was the one big game that you could only get on the Xbox One as opposed, you know, and then recently they brought it to PC. Yeah. And finally here, David, how did Respawn mess up again?
Yeah, so this has been kind of a interesting thing. So initially they came out with a new monetization feature where they're coming out with a whole bunch of new cosmetics, and you would have to get the cosmetic from these loot boxes. And I believe it was if you don't I believe they were random, if you were to get no repeats, you would have to get about 24 loot boxes at $7 each in order to get all of the cosmetics. Luckily, you can earn two of them in game. So, I mean, definitely,
it's like halfway there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So then they eventually relented and said, all right, no, what we're going to do is we're going to let you just, in addition, loot boxes, all that's still there, but you can just buy the items you want outright for, I believe, $17 each.
Okay.
Which, as you might imagine, didn't make people a whole lot more happy.
Right.
They then had I believe it was like a Reddit or somewhere, kind of apology question answer type session of like, hey, we're going to do better. Here's our plans, that sort of thing. Unfortunately, when upset players started insulting them, several of their developers just went off on them. Or I guess, to be fair, at least one of their developers, it's not clear to me from what I read if it was more than one, just calling people dicks and freeloaders and asshats and so on. That again didn't go over well, and the CEO has now apologized.
Yeah, that's unprofessional. That's not good.
Everyone is thinking it, but you can't say it if you're on the developer end.
To face the slings and arrows of a community that has an axe to grind. Like, I understand that is really tough, but I don't know, just walk away as opposed to making it just practically, from a practical standpoint, you're just going to make things worse for yourself,
right.
by kicking the hornet's nest.
It does, definitely, obviously, especially the people making like death threats and bringing family into it, stuff like that. Not good. At the same time, I do think there's, the case where the easiest way to avoid controversy over loot boxes is don't have loot boxes.
Do something that's not actively hostile to people who want to give you money.
And explain this is ultimately would have netted out to us, because to directly purchase this is what it would take to break even, because running this game is incredibly expensive and we're giving it all away for free and we're trying to find ways to keep it going, etc. I think there is a way to communicate that is not going to ameliorate everybody, because once something is free, it should always be free, especially on the internet. Where text fields are free.
Man, having to pay for stuff is what I play games to escape from. Don't put that into my escape.
So it's interesting. One of the things that's too bad is it actually seems like that was something they were trying to do in all this, is be very open about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, it's an unfortunate situation. Like, overall, I'm not entirely sold on the whole free-to-play thing. Mm-hmm. Just because it seems like it ends up, it ends up working twice, maybe? Warframe and Kingdom of Loathing are the only two good examples I can think of.
Right. Yeah, and everything else becomes a whale hunt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Just, let me buy a $60 box with your shit in it. Like, just give it to me. So PR team and devs, well done. You have alienated your player base. This is from user Cool Oats. You committed the ultimate cardinal sin. You got personal. You, as a team of professionals trying to make money, got personal. You got personal and decided to insult your player base, calling us asshats and freeloaders. Not a wise move. We won't forget this. You've set a new tone for the kind of interaction we'll be having with you. It's a cold one. One where there weren't any illusions about the reality of the situation. Previous notions of, quote, family are dead. We are mere consumers to you, and that is obvious. You have chosen to bring in a new era of hostility and bitterness. Well done. Great PR
move. To be fair,
it
sounds like people are learning some important life lessons.
That was a response that was posted,
you need to read it with the voice cracks that the inevitable 13-year-old that wrote it would have.
I maintain, like, anything that teaches kids earlier, like, that you can't trust corporations, is probably okay by me.
Yeah, but then they'll turn around and vote because, yeah. Sorry, no, I'm gonna stay as far away from that as possible. No, just that, like, that this post surfaced on Something Awful, and people are like, oh yeah, like, just the people think that they all sound like Brad Pitt doing the "Do not fuck with us" speech from Fight Club, which is exactly what that is. But it's like, we won't forget this, gamers as a whole. And it's like, oh my god, like, yeah, you're right. Like, they fucked up. They did something unprofessional and uncool. Like, they, like, you know there is a double standard, you know, like, the somebody who works for and represents the company is held to a higher standard. And again, even just practically by opening up and saying what they thought, not in their private Slack, but just, like, outward, it confirmed every notion of persecution that the worst elements of this have, you know, and, you know, just kind of ruined any benefit of the doubt. But, like, just, like, you know, can you blame people for being a, can you blame the developers and the people who had to deal with this particular stuff for, like, just not having any patience for the tone and not having any patience for stuff above and beyond the legit criticism? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think you're right, although I do think it goes both ways. Like, I think there is definitely a degree to which, AAA companies, or probably any companies, let's be honest, mm-hmm. like, want to, create this idea of, community, and we're all in it together, and this is a collaborative process, until that becomes inconvenient.
Yeah, probably, but I don't know. Previous notions of family are dead. It's like, if you believed that about a big company, like, I don't know, yeah. kind of shame on you, maybe. Like, that's the line that they're going to try and sell you, but you're probably, that's really naive.
After you have stopped returning my fan emails, yeah. Your notion of family to me is dead.
Right. You know, I'm not trying to side with the big corporation, but just, like, with the individual people who have to deal with this, who are on the front lines.
Oh no, totally.
Yeah, that's where my sympathy is.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. They can't walk away from the arrangement as readily as somebody who's just playing the game can. There are plenty of other games to play, other jobs and games hard to find. I think that's everything. We had everybody's story, I believe. So how do you all feel about bundling up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. We're coming up on two, or sorry, not on two, blah. We're coming up on 300 here, pretty quick. I know, right? I want to, let's see here. So the week of September the 2nd, the week of Labor Day, no show that week. I'm going to be getting back from travel, and I do not want to force anybody anybody to record on a Labor Day. So no episode for that. We'll be back next week, and then a week off after that. So that's it as far as programming notes. Is that agreeable to all here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine by me. When what week does 300 actually fall with that skip date then?
With that skip date, then 300 will fall. So this is 297, 298. It would be the record date of 916.
916. Holy shit, I will be in Greece.
Duh.
I should be in Greece on the 9th and the 16th. I will pre-record something at the very least.
Okay. We'll get it figured out. Cool. Yeah. Well, if you are listening and you would like to help out, you can tell your friends about the show, review us on Apple Podcasts, and consider going to patreon.com/duckfeedtv to support the show and the network more broadly. Am I forgetting anything, guys?
No, keep being awesome.
Yeah. Once again, best wishes to Jala. So you can find me. I've been Cole. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
All right. I've been Dennis, and this all got switched up recently. So you can find me on Twitter at @deck_of_wonders. And then my Twitch, you can surprisingly easily edit your Twitch name, is now twitch.tv/deckofwonders. All one word.
Nice.
So locking that stuff down while I can.
Yeah.
I'm just David Meismith.
I'm going to say I'm just Ben Merkel, too.
And stick around for some titles. Who's got them?
Get your titles here.
See, I just stopped in that. I assumed it was inevitable that the title would be Nomansky.
Yeah, I got Nomansky.
Okay.
I also have Cafectorio, which I think is pretty good. Okay. With a little e-squiggle.
A little e-squiggle?
Like cafe, you need to put the little accent over the...
I gotcha.
The French umlaut.
Yes.
Can the title now be the French umlaut?
No,
to
no.
To be fair, I would support that.
We are beyond the bounds for titles.
Yes. So those are my two.
Okay. Ben?
The only one I have written down is the bull is round and has a hole in it.
Let's see here. I have extremely high children. And everybody stop punishing each other. I forget what that was about, but Nomansky seems to be the winner. My votes.
Oh, yeah.
I like extremely high children. I don't know what the context for that is.
It was Dennis talking about taking his kids to that music festival and how they couldn't handle their weed. It was a joke. It was a joke he made. I covered for you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is Nomansky okay?
I'm in favor of Nomansky.
Okay.